Let's see, a couple things. We're going to be here Saturday, and we started really the powerful pages on how we get right with the world. We talked about forgiveness on page 76 and step 8. I put that podcast out. It's out on the site. And we're going to plow through the instructions on how we get right with the world and make amends. And it's powerful stuff in those pages. Sunday night, we're going to be doing the second part of the doctor's opinion. Last Sunday, I had the ballet recital, but actually, I had such a bad virus, I couldn't even go. I was really sick, so I feel better today.
Good.
And we're going to plow through that. And tonight, we're on really the most powerful pages in the book. I say that every day, don't I? But we're on selfishness and self-centeredness. We're going to finish step 3, maybe tonight. Just went through it with 5 guys who went through these pages, so I'm a little dazed. I hope I can do a good job. There's a lot in it. Other things, I can't think of anything else right now. So we've come on Wednesday nights, and we covered pages 60 and 61 last week. And this tells us that we have a requirement if we're going to live, really. And the requirement is that I be convinced that my life run on my self-will can never be successful. And my self-will is my stubborn or willful adherence to my own desires or ideas. Or obstinately doing what one wants in spite of the wishes or orders of others. Anybody do that? And my life run on self-will can never be successful. And we have to know that in the bottom of our heart or we're going to die. And they're going to tell us that on the pages we're going to read today. And then on page 61, I actually wrote out the... I had Patty write out the questions on what is my basic trouble. It asked me, was I not a self-seeker trying to be kind? Now, this is important because he asks us here, what is our basic trouble? And he asks us questions. And then on the next page we're going to read tonight, we're going to find out what the root of the trouble is. Isn't it clever how it's written? The book is very well written. There are no lines or sentences in here that were wasted. So were you a self-seeker trying to be kind? The one that it really is true for me, I can still be, is that I was a victim of the delusion that I can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of my life by managing well, on page 61, that middle of the paragraph. And I was under this delusion. I didn't realize it wasn't true. All I had to do was keep trying harder and manage better, and I'd fix the world so I'd be okay. Was it not evident to the rest of the players that that's what I wanted? Everybody could see what I was up to. Did not my actions make them wish to retaliate? Anybody retaliate at you? Mm-hmm. And in my best moments, wasn't I a producer of confusion rather than harmony? So we covered all that. And now we're going to start on page 62. And I'm just going to read the last line. Whatever our protestations are, am I not concerned with myself, my resentments, or my self-pity? Now, most people are, right? Most people are concerned with themselves, aren't they? A lot of normal people have resentment, and a lot of normal people get self-pity. But we're going to see that for the alcoholic, this is poison to live on self-will. We're going to die from our self-will. This is our basic problem. Alcohol is not my problem. If I stop living on self-will, alcohol will not come in the picture. Now, a resentment, I looked it up, is bitterness or indignation at being treated unfairly or seeing someone or something as being wrong. Anybody ever do that? And self-pity is an excessive, self-absorbed unhappiness over one's own troubles. And usually blaming other people for it, right? How did this happen to me? I'm such a great guy. Now, what's the relationship between selfish and self-centeredness and alcoholism? Why did they put this on page 62? Why did they put this at the first page of the book? They're waiting 58 pages of doctor's opinion to get to this, because I had to understand that there's something wrong with my body, that I cannot put alcohol in my body and control it. Anybody have that? I have a mind that tells me I don't like the way the world looks, and my mind tells me that I need a drink, even when I've sworn never to drink again, and I know it's harmful, and I know I can't control it. Now that's a real problem, isn't it?
Yeah.
And so I've lost the power to control a drink, and I've lost the power of choice. Now here's the deal. If I get my spiritual illness straightened out, then I won't be irritable, restless, and discontent. And I won't, when I don't feel okay, I won't seek alcohol, I'll seek God. So it won't matter if I have an allergy of the body anymore, right? And my obsession of the mind will be relieved by God, because I'll be with Him and He'll say, like Joe said, it's a bad idea, and we're going to have all these tools we're going to learn to treat our self-centeredness. So now they know we're ready to handle it, because we just said the A, B's, and C's, right? Yeah, I'm an alcoholic. I can't manage my life. I'm powerless over alcohol. No human power can relieve it, and God can and will if you're sought. Now, God relieves it through relieving my self-centeredness. And then the other things don't come into play. And we're going to read when we get to step four. It says we have a spiritual malady, and when we straighten out spiritually, we straighten out mentally and physically. So now we're getting to the whole deal. People don't come to AA because they don't come in through the door and say, I'm self-will run riot. I want to be relieved of my self-centeredness. How do I do that? Please, right away. No, they got a list of 10 people they want executed who got them here, you know, and want them to suffer a lot. It's like Game of Thrones. You want them to suffer before they die. I don't think some of those people suffered enough. But anyway, we're not going to finish the chapter today. Selfishness and self-centered. That, I think, is the root of my trouble. Now, the root of my trouble, we talked about what's our basic trouble, but the root of all of my troubles is in me. It's my centeredness on me for what I need, what I want to do. Now, I gave you the handout last week on the instincts of life and what makes up self. We're going to go over this when we get to step four, when we look at the manifestations of self that we inventory on step four. And so, I always thought I was in control of my life. Anybody else think that? Some guys thought it today when they read this. But guess what? I was driven, my car each day was being driven by my fear. And my fear was because I was relying on self to manage the world. I had self-delusion. I was self-seeking. I had self-pity. Anybody else have that? So you see, we were never really in control of our lives. We thought we were. But we weren't. Our fear, our self-centeredness, our self-seeking, our self-pity, all of our character defects were driving us. And they were rooted in our self-centered soil. So anybody think you want to change that? Mm-hmm. Now, everybody who comes to AA should be given a gift card. It should have your name on it, and it should say, "Welcome to AA, you self-centered a-hole. Good job. Good job of managing your life and ruining it." Then the next page should say, "Please fire yourself immediately." Signed, God. I mean, that's the deal. I mean, we're laughing, but it's true. We don't know that when we come here. We probably have some new people. I didn't know that when I came here. But you have to study the book. Now, the book's pretty clear, right? And we spent a long time getting to this. We've probably spent weeks and weeks, maybe 6 months getting here. So I was never in control. Now, does anybody have fear today? Everybody has fear. We all do. Fear will control your life. Now, before I came in here, fear dominated my life. My whole life was trying to fix the fears and manage the fears. I don't know about you, but I was afraid of everything. And I was self-seeking to try to be okay. And then anybody feel sorry for yourself when it didn't work out?
Of course.
Oh, yeah. And it was always somebody else's fault. Mm-hmm. Right? Oh, I forgot. Mark's not here tonight, but if we can go back to page 61. Sorry. It's in the middle of page. There's a line here that it says, admitting, anybody see that? Mm-hmm. Admitting he may be somewhat at fault. Isn't that nice of us? I am sure that other people are more to blame. Now, Mark made a good point. He's not here tonight. He's in Atlanta. But he said, when you run out of people to blame, then you have to look at yourself. And you really, when you're really honest, you have that moment of clarity from God. You can't see that it's their problem anymore. It's your problem. Does that make sense? You can't blame getting in jail and the DUI on the police or the wrong road or the wife. You can't blame all the bad decisions you've made on other people anymore. Now, that's a gift. Because when you do that, then you're able to be humble enough to seek help. It's very important. So here it says, I stepped on the toes of others and they retaliate. Now, a lot of people on your resentment list when you get there, we're not there yet, are people you were angry at or resented and you thought they did things to you. But when you do your four-step inventory, you're going to realize that a lot of the things they did was a reaction to how you were or what you did. Anybody step on the toes of other people? Did you say you were sorry? No. You stepped on a few more. Anybody was in our way, right, of getting what we wanted. Now, sometimes people did hurt us, seemingly without provocation. You couldn't understand how this could happen to you. You know, this guy says that his wife told him that if you drink again, I'm going to leave you. And that confused him. He wasn't sure what that meant. This speaker, Russell S. And he drove about 2 miles and he said, now what does she really mean by that, you see? And then he drank again and she left him. And then he wondered how that happened. How'd that happen? You see how it is? But this is a key line for me. It's so true. And it's the story of my life. At some time in the past, I made decisions based on what I wanted, on self, which later placed us in a position to be hurt, not only me, but my loved ones and other people. And when you've been in the program a while and you are working the steps, you'll look back and see a lot of things you did. And you'll say, why did I do that? I was thinking of one when I was 27 in the ER, it was 3 in the morning. And, you know, I was Michael the Magnificent in charge of the ER, and I had this patient there, and I wanted the labs, and I wanted to know what to do. And so I decided to call the head of the lab at home, because the lab wasn't fast enough. So I got the number for the supervisor of the University of Chicago Hospital Labs, and I woke him up and said, would you get these people to do that potassium? And he probably thought I was crazy. And I said, it needs to be done right away. And they're screwing around down there. The labs are slow tonight, blah, blah, blah. So he said, well, I'll take care of it. And then I got a call the next day from the chief of medicine. I said, oh, I'm going to get a medal or something. Yeah. And he called me up and he said, you need to come right in. So I go in. He said, now, what were you thinking? And I got reamed out. And I said, well, gee, you know, my motives were good. You know, I needed the lab, right? It made sense to me. But now I look back and it was so terrible. I did a lot of things like that. Anybody else do that? And that was my alcoholism. And it's sad, but I don't want to do that anymore. And I haven't done that for a long time. But I hurt myself. I hurt other people. And it's sad. It's a sad thing. Now, here's the good news. I don't have to do that anymore. I don't have to make decisions based on self and hurt anybody ever again. And if I work these steps, I don't have to do that. I don't have to have any more shame and guilt. Anybody have shame and guilt when you come in here? And probably people do. It takes a long time to get over shame and guilt. But I know I'm forgiven by God, and I've forgiven everybody on my list that I can think of. And so if I don't forgive myself, that's a form of self-centeredness too. So when I have shame and guilt today, and when I look back at that episode, I felt bad, but you know what I said? I had the wrong manager. I was managing the world, I was under delusion, and I was playing God, and it didn't work. If I had God managing my life that day, I wouldn't have made the call, right? So, but I look back, it's helpful to look back to see, to make sure. It's like hitting bottom. You don't want to forget your bottom. All right, so here's the greatest promise in the big book. Our troubles, I think, are basically of my own making. Now, why is that the greatest promise in the book? Because if it's them, we're screwed. I can't change them, but I can change myself. If my problems are my own making, then if I change me and my personality and the way I react, I don't have to have problems with people anymore. Does that make sense? And I don't have to make decisions based on self that hurt me anymore. That's what we're talking about, the freedom of the bondage of self. Anybody ever heard that at a meeting? We want to be the freedom of the bondage of our self-centered personality. They arise, so my troubles rise out of me. And where in me? Is it because I'm left-handed? No, it's in my mind. They arise out of my thinking. Now here's a key line in the big book. The alcoholic is an extreme example of self-run riot. We're not just self-run riot. We're an extreme example of it. Only an extreme example of self-run riot is going to call somebody at 3 in the morning who's the head of the whole University of Chicago Hospital of Labs to yell at him because the potassium wasn't there fast enough. It seems ludicrous. And when I did it, I felt like it was just the right thing to do. There's no doubt in my mind. But it's sad, isn't it? We're self-run riot. Now, what's the problem with an alcoholic being self-run riot, an extreme example of it? There's no room for God, that's true. But if an alcoholic is self-run riot, we have another problem. We can't control how much we drink when it gets in our body. And when we don't feel well, we're irritable, restless, and discontented as the result of being self-run riot. We seek the ease and comfort of alcohol. And then we drink, and we know when we drink, we can't control it, and we are in big trouble. And we don't even realize it. Nobody went to the liquor store and said, you know, I have self-run riot, but I'm an extreme example, so I need 2 bottles. See, we're extreme, so we need 2 bottles because we need to treat it. You see how it's related self-will to killing us, to our alcoholism. There are a lot of obnoxious people in the world who are self-run riot, but they're just going to be miserable and make other people miserable. We're going to die from our self-run riot because we're alcoholics. Does that make sense? We have a fatal disease, and we've known people who've died recently. So, although he doesn't usually think so, Norm's not here, that's his favorite line. We don't even think so. It never occurred to us, did it? And so now when you look back, when you do your 4 step is where you can see how you were self-run riot, extreme example. And you see it and you said, wow, I did all these things and I thought all these things and I didn't even realize that my motives were not good and they were all self-centered and I was always being threatened, my pride and self-esteem, right, and all that. All right, so you see why self-will is bad, run riot is bad for an alcoholic. Everybody understand that now? Because if we don't change and being an extreme example of self-will, we're going to drink again. And he says the drink is to die. Remember that? All right, so everybody agree that they were extreme example of self-will run riot? Anybody who wasn't in the room? If you weren't, you may not need to be here. All right, so if we all agreed, it says above everything. I want to know what's above everything. We must be rid of this selfishness. Anybody agree with that?
Yes.
We have to be rid of our selfishness because that's the root of all our trouble. It's not them, it's not alcohol, it's me and my thinking, and it's based on me, my soil rooted in me and what I need. You see that? And we must be rid of it. Why? It's going to kill us. Why do you think they put that in here? We must, or it kills us. Well, they threaten your life like two or three times in this page. But why? Because the alcoholic will say, well, it's going to kill him. It's not going to kill me. I'm not that bad, you see. We're very good at seeing things incorrectly. And we think it's, well, we read it, and a lot of people read it because it says, I must, or it's going to kill me. God makes that possible. So what they're telling you is if these things are true, so I have people read it in the first person, and then I, after each statement, I say, is that true for you? So I say, your troubles, I think, are my own making. Is that true for you? They arise out of yourself. Is that true for you? You see, the big book is a series of questions. It should be, really, we should take it and just write each statement as a question if you're working with a new person. You can start with a doctor's opinion. It's very, very well written, very spiritual. It's a series of questions. Is this true for me? Is this true for me? Is this true for me? And if it's true for you, then you're going to want to make this decision at the bottom of the page. So it's going to kill me. Now, here's a clever four words that are hidden in this book. God makes that possible. Have you ever been in a meeting where they read that? Hardly ever. But this is the most important statement in the book. It's not possible without God. Page 24, it says you have no defense against the first drink. Does anybody believe that?
Yes.
All right, page 43, after you read the Jaywalker and Bill and Joe and Bob and all those people, it says, 83, bottom of the last paragraph. It's very important. Is it okay if we look at this? Page 43, the last paragraph, before they're getting you ready to talk about God and how it works. It says, the alcoholic at certain times, everybody see that? Page 43.
Once more.
It's the last paragraph. Anybody know what the last paragraph means? Once more, the alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first drink. Now that's bad. Why? Because they've taken 43 pages to tell you if you take the first drink, you can't control how much you drink. And neither he nor any other human being can provide such a defense. His defense must come from a higher power. So God is your defense against dying from alcoholism. God is your defense against the first drink. God is your defense against your self-centeredness. Do you see that? Page 62. Now, the other thing that's cleverly not discussed at meetings is they tell us in the book that alcoholics have a disease that only a spiritual experience will cure. Okay? If you have an alcoholic, you need a spiritual experience to cure your alcoholism. That's the definition of a real alcoholic. And it tells you that God is the only thing that makes that possible. So you're going to have a relationship with God, experience the Spirit, and that relationship treats your alcoholism, your self-centeredness. Now, how do we know it? It says in the big book on page 84 that's read every meeting. You can't get them to stop reading it. It says, suddenly God can and will, if he were sought. And it says, suddenly we realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. That's the whole deal. What now, at 3 in the morning, if I was going to call, I would say, you know, bad idea. That's a bad idea, Michael. I'll give you an example of my alcoholism. I open the pool, and I'm looking at the grass, and it's high. And it's uneven. And I said to myself, well, I thought they were out here cutting the grass yesterday. And what the heck are they doing? They're not doing a decent job. And I was getting all worked up for a few minutes. I said, I'm going to go call them right now. And then I said, no, I think I'll go swim instead. And it's not worth it. It's not worth calling. They'll cut it next week. Okay? That's good, right? But guess what? They hadn't cut it. They came while I was in the pool to cut the grass. So if I'd called them and made an a-hole of myself, they would have said, well, we're on there today. But you see how it works? You could be in recovery a long time and still have alcoholism. But the good thing is it only took me like 30 seconds to realize it was such a waste of time and it's not a big deal. And so, but it's good to be able to laugh at myself. I can see it all the time. And that God was doing for me what I could not do for myself. I didn't have to call him and complain. All right, let's finish this up. We're going to finish this paragraph. There's no way of getting rid of self entirely without his aid. Now, the key thing here is that we always think that we're aiding God. God doesn't need our help. We need his help. What is our job in AA? Grady, can you stop back there? What is our job in AA? Is to let go of all the things that are blocking me from God. Like, I had to let go today my idea that I needed the grass cut right and they weren't doing it right. It was ridiculous. And so I need God's aid. God makes it possible. Now, I had moral and philosophical convictions galore. Did anybody have them? I would wake up in the morning and say, I'm not going to piss him off today. I'm not going to get upset, right? I'm going to get along great with everybody. I'm going to be serenity and love and peace, and I'm going to be everything in the scriptures. 9 o'clock, you're already worked up, you're upset about it. Anybody else do that? Now, what was the problem with having moral and philosophical convictions galore, which I could not live up to them, even though I would have liked to? Is they were my moral and philosophical convictions. They were rooted in me and what I thought I needed to do better. And they have to be rooted in God. And I can live up to God's convictions for me, can't I? Because he's gonna give me the power to do so. So I don't have to worry about my moral and philosophical convictions, I just have to do God's will for me. And it says, neither could I reduce my self-centeredness much by wishing or trying on my own power. Did anybody do that? Mm-hmm. Now, here's the problem I see with treatment. The only treatment for alcoholism is God. The only treatment for alcoholism is the 12 steps in your relationship with God as a result of that. The steps are just the tools, the spiritual tools, to build this spiritual house that you're going to live in with God. Now, how does treatment do that? So it's not really treatment, it's kind of getting you started. But the real treatment is in this. And you have to have God's power, not my power. Now, here's the other problem. Knowledge won't fix it. I can be really smart and drink and quote this page. I could go to the liquor store and buy 2 bottles and said, I'm self-will run riot. Screw that. You get it? Knowledge won't fix it. Will fear fix it? Fear won't fix it. It will for a while. The only thing that'll fix it is complete surrender, complete defeat, the decision we're going to make in 2 minutes, and then following through on the action of the steps. We have to be willing to change. Anybody want to change? We have to believe we can change. I believed I can change because I saw people who were changed when I came in here. I also believe I could change because they changed. You read Bill's story. You saw what happened to him, and they wrote this book. And then I have to decide to change. That's what we're going to do now. We're going to make a decision to change. I don't want to be a self-centered, extreme example of self-will run riot anymore, right? Now, how do I change? I have to take the actions, the steps 4 through 9, and then I'm changed, and I live in the world of the Spirit with God in 10 and 11, and I practice the principles in my affairs, and I carry the message that you can change as a result of these steps. And I can show them how to do that, right? That's the deal. So we're just going to do this. I'm going to stop. This is the how and why of it. First of all, I had to quit playing God. Did anybody know they were playing God? No. I had to get that card. It told me, good work. You ran the whole world. You self-centered, and you need to fire yourself. And God signed it. Why? It doesn't work. Now, I said it, of course it's not going to work, right? But it took me months or maybe years to realize that the reason it doesn't work is you're not God. See, isn't it so obvious? I was running the world. It's not my job. And they're going to tell us that in the next paragraph. And in the drama of life, which is in my mind, that's where all my drama is, in my mind, I'm going to make a decision that he's going to be my director. So I want to stop right there. We'll pick up with that next week, because it's good stuff we read, isn't it? We only read, what, two paragraphs, but they'll change your life, don't they? Now, I want to tell you, if you're new, or if you've been sober a while, and you really don't feel good, and you're still having problems in life, it's because you don't really believe what we just read. Because if you really believe what we just read, you'd be doing everything you can to find God and get peace. This is going to drive, this decision you make is going to drive the rest of your life. And you make it every day. I make the decision every day that God, well, as soon as I wake up. They give us some advice on page 86. When we wake up in the morning, they say, we think of our plans for the day, right? Mm-hmm. Warning, you're an alcoholic. It says, before you begin, we're going to pray to God to direct my thinking, divorcing it from selfish, decided, self-seeking motives. See, the decision you're going to make now in the third step is a decision you make the rest of your life all the time. And why? Because you understand the consequences of a life run on self-will. Now, how do you know when you're 10 years sober that you need to do this? Well, I wasn't feeling good because I decided that the grass was too right. They didn't cut it right. And there you go. And I'm in a stew for like 30 seconds. And I said, gee, it's ridiculous. It's just the grass. Get in the pool. Don't you see? And we understand that because we get disciplined now by how we feel, and we change it with the result of the steps. So, and then if you don't do 4 through 9, you don't have the tools to do step 10 and 11. Okay, thank you. That's enough.